Before we get to today's show, let me tell you about HubSpot. Finding a service solution that helps you keep your customers happy can feel impossible. Like, try to remember the name of that guy you literally just met at the networking event. HubSpot's all-new Service Hub can help. It brings together service and success together on one platform with AI-powered help desk and chatbots to handle your frontline support tickets. So you can scale support and drive retention and revenue. Visit HubSpot.com/service to learn more. Hey, hey, welcome to another episode of Marketing Against the Grain, your show for marketing-minded people everywhere. I'm your host, Kip Bodner, CMO at HubSpot. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Kieran Flanagan, the CMO over at Zapier. And we have a very, very special guest. Today, we are joined by Lenny Rachitsky. And Lenny is the host of Lenny's podcast. He is the author of Lenny's newsletter. He is one of the foremost experts on product and growth in the world, to me at least. I love his content. We've been wanting to have Lenny on for a long time. Lenny, I'm so excited to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me. Quite the intro. Really appreciate it.
You deserve that kind of an intro. Are you serious? You've got one of the top business podcasts in the world. You've got this incredible newsletter, and you've built on some amazing experience in product and growth and are now taking that out to the world and teaching everybody. So we're excited to have you here with us today. And I know there's a bunch of places we want to go. Kieran, I want to kick it over to you so that you can kind of kick things off in our discussion today.
Lenny, you have an incredible background. I know we've talked before, and you may want to give the audience some context of, you know, your kind of journey in tech, or at least at Airbnb. The thing we would really love to start on is, in relation to that, what, if anything, has been different or the same about growing like a content audience, an audience for content mediums, and that you managed to bring some of those learnings from Airbnb into what you're doing today? Like, I'm really interested in how the stuff that you used to do translates to what you do today.
I think what's most interesting is it's very few things translate.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So I led supply growth at Airbnb for a long time. And then I led the team that helped the booking experience, help you book on Airbnb. So I'm basically optimizing conversion. And so I spent a lot of time on growth. But interestingly, what I found with the newsletter and with the podcast is nothing helps it grow other than just consistency and quality of content.
Mm-hmm. No hacks?
No. Like, once in a while, there's a couple spikes here and there, but there's nothing like sustainable helps it grow other than just consistently putting out good stuff. Like I was just going to say, I tried referrals, I tried paid ads, I tried guest posts, and those that helped early on. There's a few things that help early on, just kind of get it kickstarted. But if you just look at like the trend line of growth, nothing makes a dent other than just keeping at it and keeping the quality bar high.
Can I say one thing that I do think, being like a consumer of your content? And so, you know, obviously one thing that helps is that you are in that space and you are very well regarded within that space, where it does help you get the kind of people onto your podcast and maybe get people, you know, interact with your content. But the thing that I think stuck out in terms of your content early on was how you included these kind of mini case studies, right? You just put out a post on inflection points, mm-hmm. and it's all real world stories and it's case studies, like, but they're miniature case studies. It's not like this like 24 page case study on how Facebook did this. It's like these kind of quick hits of all of the things that companies did around a singular topic. So do you kind of agree that helped to differentiate you? And if so, was that on purpose, or you kind of just stumbled upon that? Like, was that a very thoughtful, like, I'm going to try this as an experiment, or just like, I'm going to do this because I want to do it?
So with questions like that, Seinfeld has this funny thing that people ask him. Like, people are like, hey, Jerry Seinfeld, why don't you like do other types of comedy? Like, how'd you narrate on this thing that you do? And he's like, this is all I know how to do. Like, if I could do other things, I would do other things. And so with that post and a lot of posts, like if I had the answer, I would be like, here's the answer. I've got it, but I just don't. And so it comes out of like, I just want to get you the best possible answer. Let me go research and ask people that actually know what they're doing.
Mm.
Where it actually started the first time I did that, I left Airbnb. I was there a long time. People kept asking me all these questions about how to build a marketplace company. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, here's like what Airbnb did, but I don't know if that's the way to do it. Maybe there's other things that could have worked. Maybe there's things we did that worked in spite of ourselves. And so what I did is I embarked on this big research project. Let me just talk to all the biggest marketplace companies and see what they did and see if there's any patterns that emerge across all marketplace companies. And that turned into this 5-part series of how to kickstart and scale marketplace business. And that did really well. So I kind of learned from that experience of, this is a really good way of doing it. I'm just kind of doing primary research on behalf of people. And it's like very low cost for them. And I spent all this time doing the work. And I could see why it's valuable because I've done a lot of work for people.
That's what I want to get into. Like, one of the things you said is like keeping the quality
bar high, right? And I think, Kieran, you and I, in doing this show, we've learned that stories, examples, data, and more importantly, just to what you were saying, Lenny, research matters so much. It's like, oh, you have this unique perspective and insight that has real depth to it. That's what really resonates with people. But somehow, Lenny, you do that constantly. And that's what I don't understand is like you, between the newsletter and the podcast, you have this like unending flow of it. And as somebody who's doing it right now, it's very hard, but it takes a lot of time. Like, how are you pulling it off?
The secret is lots of hard work and many hours of work. One of the advantages I have, unlike you two, is you have full-time jobs.
This is true.
I don't. So there's this kind of like cool flywheel that kicks in once you get to a point where you could do this full-time is you just have a lot more time than anyone else. And I find a really direct correlation between the amount of time I put into something and the success of that piece. So the secret is just putting in time. And the things that you find useful, usually the person spent more time on that than somebody else that tried to do that and not nearly as well.
Well, while I agree with you on the time part, the other part of that is like what you pick to spend that time on. Because like there are a lot of people who put a lot of time in and pick bad stuff.
Yeah. Okay. I do have a trick.
That doesn't resonate with people.
I do have a trick
there. I'd love to hear how you pick the stuff.
The way I pick the stuff, and I didn't think about it this way, but it ended up being really powerful, is I started the newsletter as an advice column, like a Dear Abby type thing, where people send me questions and I answer their question. And what turns out is smart about that is that the content is rooted in a real problem somebody actually has, not just me pontificating on something that may be a thing. So that helps a lot, is just like rooting your work on like, what does somebody actually need? And that kind of comes back to one of the most important parts of writing and content is there's like a job to be done that you need to nail better than somebody else. So if you think about newsletters, what are the jobs to be done? There's like entertain me. So there's a lot of newsletters and podcasts of just like fun stuff and humor and jokes and comics. Another job to be done is help them make money. There's a lot of newsletters that help you invest in Bitcoin timing and stuff like that. There's a job to be done of just help me be better in life. So there's like Emily Oster and like you just like practical advice stuff. Another job to be done, which I'm in, is just I want to be better at work. And so what are ways I can help you be better at work? For me, it's like help you build better product, grow product. You know, there's all kinds of work. So there's like a lot of opportunities, like help salespeople be better salespeople, help engineers be better engineers. So there's a lot of like niches within that. But I think it's really important you figure out what's the job you're doing for someone and then just do that better than anyone else that's doing it out there. And the key there is just putting in the time.
Which does speak to your background in product, right? Like you approached everything from, you know, a job to be done, a problem to be solved.
Maybe, yeah.
I was going to say, you said there wasn't that much transferable. That is definitely a pure rip out of the product world.
There's one. We got one.
The other thing I'm obsessed by is like, for people who have like reached your kind of success, how much of it is like very thoughtful? Because when you were in Airbnb, I assume like part of leading the growth team is hypothesis, iteration, test and experiment, trying to find the thing. And like how much of a creator's success is stumbling upon the thing versus like being very intentful about that is the thing. And it sounds like maybe it's part and part, like you did go through a process when you were like, okay, well, here are the jobs to be done. Here's one that I can solve and I can solve it. I feel I can solve it in a better way. But then there's like a little bit of stumbling and hopefully this is going to be the thing that resonates.
Yeah. So to be clear, I wasn't actually like, what are the jobs to be done and what job can I do for people? That's like looking back, I could see why it worked out. It was 90% stumbling, and more specifically, so I left Airbnb. I was there for 7 years. I worked like intense hours. It was just like a go, go, go culture for a long time. And I was just like, man, I'm going to just take a break. And my plan was, let me start a company again. Maybe let me explore some ideas I had. Maybe do advising on the side as a thing. Maybe join a company. Just like, here's some options I'm thinking about. And the thing I stuck to is, let me pay attention to what gives me energy in this phase and do more of that. Just like lean into that when I get energy from something, like I have a meeting with someone, did I get energy from that or did that suck? And if something sapped me out of energy, I did less of that. That was kind of my rule. And I just found that writing gave me energy. And so I spent more time doing that and the startup stuff didn't. And other things and advising did. And I was just like doing advising calls. Like, I don't want, this is sapping me of all my energy. So most of it was just leading into what was giving me energy. And then I had this conversation with a friend about, hey, I thought I wanted to start a company, but I'm doing this writing thing on the side. What the hell am I doing writing? There's no future here. And my wife's like, why are you writing? There's no future in writing. Because she would publish some books. Like, there's nothing comes of this on the internet, writing on the internet.
You're like, you're just wasting your time. Like, come on.
She's like, I thought you wanted to start a company.
Get a real job.
Exactly. But this friend had a great point. Like, you enjoy doing this. People seem to value it, which is super rare that you do a thing that people value and want to keep reading. That's like very rare. And his advice was, don't take that for granted. Like, maybe see where that goes. Even if there's no future there, just double down on that. Maybe it'll lead somewhere. And so that's what pulled me down that road, is just like this is working. Maybe explore it. And so I just kind of kept doing that and ended up continuing to grow, mostly by just continuing to do it. So it was a lot of stumbling. Like, I hadn't written much on the internet before I started down this path.
Well, when you came from a product background, which there's some writing, but it's not like...
Right, not public writing.
Yeah, you're not writing every day as a product leader. And yeah. So clearly that was something that like resonated with you as a way to spend your time. I mean, Kieran and I have talked about this on a past episode with Tiki Bush, where it's like, it is the best way to organize mm-hmm. your thoughts and learn something is to write.
That's exactly what started me. Like, yeah, I just wanted, like, the reason I wrote the thing, first thing I wrote, which I ended up doing shockingly well, which helped me keep motivated, is I just wanted to remember what I learned
yes.
at Airbnb.
Yeah.
So my first thing that I wrote was like, what 7 years at Airbnb taught me about building a company. Just because I was thinking I'd start a company and I'm like, okay, I don't want to relearn everything. What the hell did I actually learn? Let me just sit down and write this down. And that's exactly, like, there's this quote I'm sure you've heard of, just like, I don't know what I think until I've written it down.
Yes.
And I fully feel that.
Yeah. And when people are talking to me, like, it's interesting, right? Because I'm going through onboarding, like employee onboarding for my first time in a long, long time. And when I'm in a meeting and like learning about things and people are talking to me, I kind of like somewhat understand it, but I actually need to write it out in some sort of like strategic memo or a two pager. And then I kind of internalize it and it makes sense to me. And I think it's an incredible skill that people underestimate that, you know, it does, no matter what discipline you do within the company, writing is such like an intrinsic part of how you communicate in today's world, especially when we're gravitating much more towards remote work. Like actually writing is how you communicate anything within a company. And it's a real skill to be learned. So I think I agree. Like, I think it's a great way to internalize your learnings.
Yeah. I think a lot of people look at like that post you mentioned about growth inflections. Like, I imagine many people think I already have the answer as I start writing. Like, here is the answer to what causes an inflection growth. But it's the opposite. I start just like dumping thoughts into a doc, getting quotes, talking to people, and that forms the conclusion. Like, that comes yeah. after I start writing. The writing helps me get there versus I come into it thinking, here's the answer.
Yeah, like the magic of it is like the summarization and the framing. It's like, yeah. I know that I want to answer this question, but I don't know what the most important parts are. I've got 10 really important things, but I know that there are three that are like the most important. I need to figure those out. And like, right. that's the blend of the art and science of that. And so I kind of get the natural progression of how you got to writing and the ritual of the newsletter and getting there kind of recurring. How the hell did you like then say, hey, you know what I want to do? I want to do a podcast that's even harder. It's even harder to get out into the world. It has way more logistics. It's not just me sitting in a room writing. I've got to like have all of these conversations and scheduling and everything. Like, why?
So I may not feel like this on the outside, but I'm trying to like keep it chill and not do a lot. So I've had these like things I should do, write a book, start a podcast, run a course. And I've always like, I will never do any of these. I just, this, like the newsletter life is really good. Like I just write an awesome email once a week and I make a meaningful income, like much more than I made at Airbnb. And so I'm like, why would I do anything more? This is great.
Yeah. Sounds awesome to me.
It's pretty sweet. And so I've avoided all those things for a long time. But with the podcast, I did Harry Stebbings' podcast, 20 BC yeah. at one point. And at the end of the recording, he's like, Lenny, you idiot. You should be doing a podcast. You're good at this. You have things to say. There's a lot of opportunity in podcasting. He's like, you should do a podcast. So that's actually what got me over the hump. Like Harry Stebbings telling me you should do a podcast. And it was like years and years of me just like, no, I will never do a podcast. There's so many podcasts. What the hell would I add to it? And then I just started trying it. And I just started doing it. Actually, it turns out it's a lot easier than the newsletter, to be honest.
Oh, really? How yeah. so?
So the newsletter, like the simple way to think about it with the newsletter, I have to come up with unique, interesting insights and write them out and craft them in a consumable way. Podcast, I extract that from someone else's brain, like you guys are doing here. And so like, you know, it takes like maybe 3-4 hours per episode of prep and recording and I have a producer that helps edit it. Mm-hmm. The newsletter takes like 10 hours minimum per post, some 20, some 100.
Wow.
It's also, podcast is easier. It's more lucrative, it turns out. And it's a little more energizing, you know, this is like fun. And it's like the end of it, you feel kind of cool. You did this whole thing.
You get to see humans.
Like, but I will say the podcast, like a lot of stuff I did, it turns out to be smart looking back. It's easier to grow the podcast with the newsletter.
Yes. Yeah.
Every episode I share with my audience, which is large yeah. now. So I think the right order is build an awesome newsletter and then launch a podcast. It's harder. I think the other way around.
Yeah. Podcast is a great add-on to engage existing audience. It is definitely a hard like front door to build, which is like first way to build that medium. Hopefully it's not too bad jumping around. Like one thing I'm really curious about that just coming back to newsletter just for one moment is, yeah. and it kind of ties really nicely to your latest post. If anyone wants to go read it, some inflection points. Like I'm curious like how quickly you got to the inflection point where you were like, oh, like this could be a business, right? Because one of the things you mentioned is perseverance, right? And perseverance is a really underrated skill because everyone's looking, like I started off looking for the hacks. It was like, well, if anyone can give me the hacks, Lenny can give me the hacks because like he has growth principles baked into the work he does. And I was like, no, like consistency and perseverance. And so how long did you have to have that kind of perseverance for until you saw some sort of inflection point where like, wow, like I could actually tell my wife, this could be a business, right? Like I'm actually doing something real here.
We'll be right back. But before, let me tell you about another podcast I love. Nudge, hosted by Phil Agnew, is brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. Ever noticed how the smallest changes can have the biggest impact? On Nudge, you learn simple evidence-backed tips to help you kick bad habits, get a raise, grow a business. Every bite-sized 20-minute show comes packed with practical advice. Nudge is fast-paced, but it's still insightful with real-world examples that you can apply. Oh, and it's the UK's fastest-growing business podcast. If you want an MBA's worth of insight in one podcast, this is the right show for you. Entrepreneurs will love the show because it's filled with repeatable, proven studies, not hearsay and one-off success stories. You're going to love the show because I was interviewed by Phil. You can go check out my episode. And I recently listened to an awesome episode. It's called Six Scientifically Proven Persuasion Techniques. It's a must listen for anyone in marketing. Listen to Nudge wherever you get your podcasts.
Actually, when I started the newsletter, I actually called it Project Avoid Getting a Real Job. And that was the goal. Like, can I make enough money? Can I make more salary than I made in salary at Airbnb? That was like, initially, actually, the goal was, can I make 100K a year? Because that's like, wow, holy shit, year, 100K from writing a thing once a week. And then I set that goal to 300K and then it's gone far beyond that. So there is actually a couple hacks. I wouldn't call them hacks, but that have led to some inflections. So early on, the way I got my, say, first 100 subscribers is I wrote a popular thing on Medium. And that got me some followers on Medium. And that turned into Twitter followers. And I started tweeting nuggets from that post on Twitter. And that started building a Twitter audience. So there's kind of like flywheel of Twitter and Medium. So that got me about 100 subscribers. This is like one of the examples of, I wouldn't call it a hack, but it led to a spurt, is doing guest posts on other newsletters with the same audience. So for me, I got the next 1,000 subscribers by doing a guest post on the First Round Review and also Andrew Chen's blog. And so those helped a lot. That was just me getting started. And the key there was like, I had interesting things to say and they wanted to share it. So that was the key. So it comes back to quality again. So that got me to the first 1,000 subscribers. Then to get to the next 10,000, it was just writing every week for 9 months, just keeping at it. And it's just, if you look at the growth chart, it's just linear growth through those 9 months. So then I was about 10,000 subscribers, and that's when COVID hit and I was making no money for a year. Airbnb stock was like dead, which I was relying on.
I'd like some money now, please.
Yeah. Like I assumed I could do this because I had some savings in Airbnb stock that one day would IPO, and it was not looking good. They had to like take this massive $2 billion loan, and it was just like not, like travel was going to not happen again, maybe. So I got really worried. And so that's when I actually launched the paid plan. I was like, okay, Project Avoid Getting a Real Job. Let's do this for real. Let's see if I can make money doing this. And so I launched the paid plan about 8-9 months after I started writing. And it did like okay initially, but basically just doing that for another year, 2 years every week helped it continue to grow and kept growing, across 300K. So then the actual next big inflection came actually fairly recently, where Substack launched this feature where you can refer other newsletters. You can recommend other newsletters, which seems like a really simple, no big deal feature. But it turns out a lot of newsletters are recommending my newsletter. So when you sign up for my newsletter, you get recommended 10 newsletters that I love and I pick them. And so there's this like really cool network effect that's happening now. So about 1,000 other newsletters recommend my newsletter.
Wow.
And so as soon as they launch that feature, I just have this like hockey stick of growth that's happening, and it's still happening. And I think I'm in the onboarding flow when you sign up, because I'm the number one business newsletter, you kind of get recommended my newsletter. So there's never been an easier time to grow a large newsletter because of that one feature. If you write awesome stuff and people recommend you, you can grow really quickly now.
I remember back in the day, the problem to solve for their audience was distribution, because newsletters somewhat like podcasts are... Most of the newsletters, and Kip and I talked to all of the big newsletters when we went through the kind of research phase of trying to buy the hustle. Like, they're predominantly all paid advertising in some respects, because there's no like one built-in core mechanism to like grow those. And so they really did nail that, it sounds like, Substack. Did those 1,000 newsletters get any type of affiliate commission for recommending you? Like,
nope.
They just do it organically.
Yeah. It's just like, what do you think is awesome? And yeah, it's just like, what do you think is great for people to read? And it feels nice to recommend great stuff. That's it. Yeah. I tried referrals and it doesn't work. Like I think for some newsletter work, obviously Morning Brew and stuff like that. But I think it has to be a certain personality of a newsletter for it to be like, send this to all your friends, get a hat, get stickers. You know, it's a different.
Well, it needs to be more, you know, higher altitude versus the depth that you go to in your newsletter, right?
Yeah.
Right. Because the thing I was going to ask actually, and you kind of maybe answered it with Substack, and I'm interested what both of you think is, if you were going to go down that original path and you started a company, the thing you were going to have to really think about, and most founders do, is like defensibility. Mm-hmm. Like, how is this like thing defensible? How about not be commoditized? And what's interesting in content is the feedback loops are really quick. Like Kip and I talk about this, where you see someone has figured out like threads on Twitter, and then like everyone does threads on Twitter, right? Or someone figures out like shitposting is a thing, and then everyone is shitposting, right? And so everyone can replicate things much faster because the barrier to entry is much lower. And I was going to ask you, like, as a founder of a content brand, like how do you think about defensibility? But maybe your defensibility is, well, I've got inserted into the Substack, you know, framework. And so it's going to be really hard for anyone to replicate that.
On the one hand, I don't really think about that. I think if you just keep providing valuable stuff to people, they're going to keep wanting it. So I think the question is, will someone come around that does much better than I at the same thing? Like, I'm not that smart. People have more time. They have more experience. It could definitely happen 100%. But I will say, I don't know why it hasn't happened, honestly. I have found a lot of people are modeling their newsletters now after my newsletter. Like I see welcome emails just like completely copied my welcome emails. There's a lot of like advice column style newsletters, exactly like the intros are the same. So there's a lot of like, you know, it's the sincerest form of flattery. People modeling the approach. No one's come like right at exactly what I'm doing yet. I wouldn't be surprised if it happened. Obviously, I have a head start. I don't think about it too much, but it could definitely happen. I don't think there's much of a moat, you know?
Let's talk about that though, because I think your moat is, you know, the grind that you've done, obviously, but then it's also like that quality of content, like that taste and knowledge, which you have on the core subject area. And you've talked about a lot on the show so far, but I guess I'd love to take a trip inside your head. Like, what are the questions you ask yourself to know if something is meeting your bar? That it's like, it's really great. And like, this is going to be something that is valuable in the world and to be more valuable than anybody else could do this week. And subsequently, like, I feel great about it.
Like, I wish I had like a formula of like, here's what I look for. A lot of it comes down to, I just look at it again and again and again. Like most of my writing is just editing. I start with just like a bunch of content and writing and bullet points, and then I form it into something. And then I just look at it like 100 times as I keep reviewing and editing. I email it to myself. I look at it on my phone. And I basically get to a point where I just feel like this is strong enough and there's nothing I can cut and there's nothing that's just like consistently confusing me. And that's kind of the core of it. I just look at it 1,000 times and keep looking and looking, looking, and what can I cut? There's this book that's been really influential in my writing called On Writing Well.
Oh yeah. Dharmesh loves that book too.
Basically, it's just cut everything is the conclusion. Just cut, 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 cut. And it's like 100 chapters on all the things you should cut. So that actually had a big impact on me. And I just kind of look for that. Like, what is not necessary? And then how do I just tighten and simplify and bullet point it and charts and table it? So that's the core of it. Like, you know, I try to find like ways to engage people in the beginning, like make it a surprise or make it interesting or story at the beginning. That's what I'm trying to work on a little bit is like actual writing, not just here's content information, but mostly it's just looking at 1,000 times. And that comes back to the time. Like I just have the time to do that. Yeah. And I think that's what makes it better.
So yeah. So you've really, your bar of quality is like, oh, I have a feedback loop of topics that people want because of the format I'm doing this thing in. I then have a research process that I go and validate that topic through my own first party research, talking to people. And then you're like, I try to be a ruthless editor and break that down and make it the best, clearest, most simple distillation of that solution. Like I remember having a college journalism professor. He was like, go through and underline every just and every very. And then cross them all out, you know, like get rid of like all these things that don't do anything. And you're saying like, that's a really important part of just getting the idea as tight as possible.
Yeah. So let's look at the example of that growth inflections post, which was super recent. So the question there was, what causes an inflection in growth? And what I do with those is I think about what are the companies I would love to get insights from and stories of, like what helped them grow. Mm-hmm. So the way I start there is just make a list. Here's the companies I would love to capture stories from. And then I just go email people that I know at these companies. And what's cool, another flywheel that kicks in with this is the more of this I do, the more connections I've built, the more companies I'm close with. So I just kind of email these people and I try not to bug them too much, but often people are excited to, you know, contribute. So I just sent an email. Here's my question. What can you share? And then I just capture all those and see what comes out of it. That's roughly the approach.
I think that is like understated in how powerful it is. Like there's a, you and I talked about this, right? Brought it up in the last podcast, Kip. There's a Twitter handle where there's a sales community and they tweet like real stats from that sales community. And the sales community, it's anonymous. So I don't actually know, because they do tweet things that you can't really share as a public company, but whatever. It's really like, but it's anonymized and it's aggregated, right? But being able to get like, you know, the look behind the scenes, there's kind of two ways I think about your content. First of all, like you described it, like I'm learning, like you put, when you're putting a case together, like you're the curious learner that's kind of learning on their behalf and yeah. You're framing it up in a really like interesting way. And then you're actually able to help take people behind the scenes. Like they feel like an insider, right? Oh, like I'm an insider. I get all of the kind of hot stuff. If you actually pay to your, for your paid subscription, you're kind of like the insider now. And I know you actually have a huge community as well mm-hmm. as part of that. And so I think there's like something in that, like that there's like core things that really make that content much more powerful than just the average post you're going to actually read.
Even more basically, like I'm just doing a lot of work for people that would cost a lot of money.
Yeah, people are like, I'm just creating a crap ton of value, guys.
Yeah.
It's not like, that hard.
Yeah, just spending tens of hours doing answering a question for you. And it's like not that expensive to get the answer.
Well, but so building on that though, like that makes total sense for the newsletter, but it's very different when you're doing the podcast, right? Like, because you're having this real-time interaction, you're trying to pull the right things out. You don't control what the other person's going to say. So like, you know, what does Lenny know today that he didn't know when he started the podcast about how to actually do those things really well? Like get the best information from people.
So when I've just like upgraded the look of the podcast, like I look back at my first episodes, I was just like so frumpy and funny looking. It was like very basic look. So there's the look of it. I think mostly it's just working on the interview techniques and continuing to follow up on questions where someone has a really vague answer is a big part of it. Same with the newsletter. Like I just tried to get to like real concrete stuff, not just like, here's a general theory I have on something.
Keep diving.
The five whys.
Just keep diving. Yeah. And then I can cut stuff that doesn't work. So that's a big part of it. Part of it is just vetting guests a little bit better. Like, you know, some guests come on and they don't actually know as much as you think. And so trying to get to that a little bit earlier. I don't know. It's all the interview technique is kind of what I find. Just like not having to like respond to every answer someone gives and just like on to the next question, on to the next question. People, yeah, people don't want you to be like, awesome, great, that was so interesting. You know, it's just like, okay, tell me something else. Sometimes it's like fun, you know, it's a balance. So it's a lot of interview. And I try to watch my interviews and try to like see what's annoying and dumb.
Yeah, we do the same thing. It's painful to watch yourself
so
that
painful.
Much.
I hate it.
It like, sucks, right?
I love that.
It's like, that's the downside of starting a podcast. You have to like listen to yourself.
Did you say you love it?
Oh, I can't get enough of myself on... When I can watch myself I watch myself on my big screen, the AI wars, and I'm like, oh, look, I'm on YouTube with all these other people.
I mean, if I had to Lindy's point, if I had a dope sweater like you're wearing, the YouTubers hate your sweater.
It's not this one. You keep getting confused.
If you like or hate the sweater, comment on YouTube now.
I would love to actually hear how you vet guests. Because that could be kind of like, you don't like bring them on for initial conversation and say,
I don't.
No, I'm not bringing you back because you suck. Like how you just vet them up front without them knowing.
I'm trying to rely more on referrals from other guests that I've had that are awesome. So that helps a lot.
Yeah.
And then watching their other talks and videos helps a lot. Just like, what do they got to say? That kind of thing. Yeah. But you know, you never know until you actually talk to someone.
Are there some interviews you just don't use?
Not yet.
Okay.
Everything's been good enough.
So you've done the newsletter, you have a community, you have a podcast. Let's say you had infinite time and infinite resources or just had the motivation to do it.
Yeah.
What is the other thing you would like to do? Like as a creator that you were not doing, like what's the thing that you think would, when you apply that energy, would make you feel the same sort of way as you do with the newsletter and podcast?
This wouldn't make me feel in the same way, but I think I would do a book.
I think you have to do a book, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's so painful. It's so much work.
Especially the topic you're going to do it on and how much information you already have put in it. But you got to do it. We all want it.
One day.
You got to give the people what they want.
I guess. I think they'll all get smarter and it'll be better the longer I wait. That's how I tell myself.
Can I say that about everything? Is that a new procrastination hack that I can use for my own life?
You take it.
But seriously, what's the hold up in doing a book?
Just the workload that it's going to... My wife actually has published a couple of books and I see the process. It's so hard. It's just like, you know, it's like a year of intense work. You don't make much from it. You know, maybe 0.1% of people make some from it. It's just the workload. Like, life's good. You know, like I talked about the newsletter, like, why would I want to bash my head against the wall for a year? But I think I'll probably do it at some point. I don't think it's time yet.
Why can't you do a book that's just a collection of the newsletters dorks would love to just like have on the shelf behind us, you know?
Tim Ferriss did that, right?
I think, though, that's the mistake people make. They think it's going to be that easy if they have a bunch of content and it's just like, oh, let's throw it together. But it never is. If you want to make it awesome, like I have a high bar and I'm very detail oriented about this stuff. So I just want to make it super awesome. And it was just suck up my life.
Yeah. Okay. So see, I got to ask you my favorite question for detail oriented people. It's like, how do you know when to stop? Like, how do you know, like you're editing that newsletter and you were just like pounding your head against the wall. Like, how do you know, like, okay, we're good here. I'm going to stop and move on to the next one.
I think very concretely, it's when I don't find anything else to tweak when I look at it. So okay. I look at it. I'm like, okay, let's fix this, fix that. And then come back to it later in the day, look at it. Okay, maybe there's a title I can make a little better. And when I find that there's just nothing I'm changing, that tells me it's ready to go. And, you know, could always be better, but, you know, I'm publishing once a week and people aren't paying me like $100,000, like $150 a year. Like it's not going to be perfect forever. But it's mostly when I'm not changing something. That's the sign to me.
Follow up to that is like, you've worked really hard to build all this stuff. And you were like, yeah, this operation, not start a business. And you kind of now ended up with a business. You're making stuff. But what are the unintended positive consequences of all this? Like, what are the really good things that have happened that you're like, I didn't expect this, but like my life is way better because of like doing this creating?
I also want to share the downsides because I think people don't think about that. But there's like so many upsides. Like angel investing is so much
easier. That's what I was hoping you'd talk about.
Yeah. Like most founders would love to have me involved in helping. So that helps a lot. And so I get just like access to a lot of cool founders and companies. That's one thing. And the other is, you know, I just get pings like at least once a day. If it's just someone saying really nice things about how much the stuff I've done has helped them. So that's always nice. And then just meeting a lot of really amazing people through the community, through the founders that I talk to. Like the network has gotten really big and interesting. On the downsides, I have no time off. No PTO. No one's going to pay me to take time off. No 401k matching, no health insurance. Like I just have to go Obamacare, no disability. You know, like if I get injured, I don't know what happens. Like you just, you know, stop.
Yeah. If you can't type, well, that's concerning, right? You're like, I don't know if I can go skiing, guys. Like I need my arms.
So I worry about that a little bit. It hasn't been a problem yet.
Like one of the great things, but I always say like where everyone really wants to end up, even when people talk about like, I want to semi-retire or retire. It's like, I just don't want to be answerable to someone else's schedule. Like I actually want to dictate my own time and own my own calendar. And I think there's obviously, you still have to work, you know, a certain amount of hours a week to do the work that you do. Like you control your own time. And there's just something I think magical about like being answerable to your own calendar and not being answerable to someone else's calendar.
100%. That part is amazing. There's this book that he probably read, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F***. And yeah. He talks about how like people think they want just freedom from everything, but it turns out we still want to solve problems and do interesting things. So I actually thought I was trying to mini retire a little bit. I was like, I'll just do the simplest thing just to make enough money and that'll be great. But I at this point I have full-time job hours. I work a lot and it's hard to resist. I think for folks like us,
totally is.
Like it'd be so, we just don't want to sit around and just, you know, check Twitter all day and watch TV.
we don't want the brain to fade. You know, you want to go and do something that helps people, right?
You just want to do interesting things and we'll end up finding work for ourselves. That's kind of what I've done. I just keep finding like the podcast. Like I don't want to do a podcast. I don't need more work, but it's hard to resist because it's just like, just a big opportunity and it's interesting and people keep asking you for it.
Well, it's also collaborative. You get to meet a lot of really awesome people that maybe you don't talk to as much if you're just heads down writing, right? So it's probably a different kind of modality of it working too, right?
There's another downside of the creator life is like, it's kind of, you're alone, like at least in the newsletter life. And it's kind of fun to work on a team. The other downside I forgot to mention is there's like, people think they're going to create this like viral TikTok video or some amazing post or some amazing podcast and it's just going to go blow up and their life will be so great. But you realize that's just like one thing, one time, and then it fades and you're done. No one cares about it again, like a few days later. And you realize it's this never ending treadmill where you consistently have to keep putting stuff out forever. Like, I don't know how I even get off this treadmill. Like, this
I don't either.
Yeah. Like a podcast, you can stop. Because it's ad-based, I'm guessing. Like with a newsletter subscription and people are paying for the next year every day. There's an annual plan being bought every day. So at least for a year, I have to keep it going. But like stopping it sounds really scary because then I lose the income. So I don't really know the exit path for something like this. I don't think about it too much. But, but that is one downside is like, you think it's like, cool, I'm going to get a viral video. It's going to be so great. But you have to keep doing that for a long time and it gets less fun. So I will say a lesson there is, make sure if you go down this path, work on something that really is interesting to you, that you're curious about, that you really care about, versus creating this job for yourself that sucks, where you're like writing about, I don't know, Bitcoin all day, and you're just like, I don't care.
I'm trying to scam people.
I like our terrible work examples, Bitcoin. It's great.
It is interesting, right? Like, we talked about this in an episode before about the creator. For very few of creators, the exit will be some sort of sale because they are the brand. Like Mr. Beast, you know, apparently got offered $1 billion for his YouTube channel. And I suspect you can maybe say, oh, maybe he can like get himself out of being the brand. Like Mr. Beast is a brand, but it's not his face. Although it's still very hard to imagine. But that's one thing for creators is like, they are the brand, and you have to, like, I think you have to be explicit over time if you want to make that into a brand that's not you front and center, or like, I'll always be the brand, but I'm not sure then what my exit is.
Maybe don't call it Lenny's newsletter if you want to do that.
Or you're going to have to just sell it to another Lenny. There's one Lenny out there. They love the same stuff. They're a billionaire.
Lenny changed their name.
Oh, the Lenny's newsletter. I mean, it's, you also underscore the importance that name doesn't matter. The content matters.
That's right.
Which everybody spends like 6 months coming up for a name.
Buying the perfect domain
name. Something, or the perfect domain name. And that does not matter. What you hit that matters is like, hey, no, find something you like, have a process, and grind it out.
Grind it out.
Yeah. Like, yeah, the name came from, I was just signing up for Substack, and their default recommendation when you're signing up is like your first name newsletter. It's because I had no plan with this thing. So I'm like, oh, Lenny's newsletter.
That's hilarious. That's a great story. As we're closing things out, one last question for me, and then Kieran, if you have anything, jump in. It's like, if somebody is listening to this and they've been on the sidelines and they're like, you know, I've been thinking about a newsletter, podcast, like kind of, that's what gives me energy, not my job. Like, what would you tell them to try to persuade them that it's a worthy thing for them to do, or to tell them, no, you don't want to do that because it's just going to be a complete miserable grind?
This is going to sound obvious, but honestly, it's just do it. Stop thinking about it. Just like write a thing and see what you think. See if you enjoy it, see if people value it. That's the more important part. And like, I will say writing is like, I don't know, some Hemingway never said this probably, but people attributed to him that writing is easy. You just sit at the keyboard and bleed. And that's how it feels a lot of times. And so it's not going to be easy, but just like all you have to do, just like Substack, you sign up, it's free. You write a thing, you could put it out there. Nobody's going to remember if it sucks. All you need to do is just like write a thing, write that something that you want to get out of your head, write something you're trying to remember or crystallize and just see how it feels. Is this cool? Do people care about what you're writing? And part of it is just realizing, do I enjoy this? And do I want to keep doing this? And you only know if you start doing it. So it's like such cliche advice, but I think it's just like, it's so easy to write. You're not going to record a video. That's harder. Just like write a thing, see how it goes.
The thing I really took away as well is if you look at Japan and 10-year-olds, there's a higher percentage of 10-year-olds in Japan that want to be a YouTuber than anything else. Like everyone wants to create their life, but really your kind of points are, it's really the perseverance and the grind. Like everything is a grind. It's just a grind that you choose. And the other, I think, lesson that's really important for people to take away is, what makes great writers great is not what they put on the page, it's what they take off the page, right? Like that editing is like so important. And I think that's a really great takeaway for everyone.
And I think to add to that, like introductions, everyone always such long introductions, like just skip the intro and just get right to it. That's something that I've learned also.
I love it. This was a great conversation, Lenny. I know you are busy and you're taking time away from your own creating to come and help us create. So thank you first and foremost. Absolutely. And everybody should go subscribe to Lenny's pod and Lenny's newsletter. And the last thing I want to ask you before we jumped off is like, who else's writing do you love? Like, what are the other newsletters you're reading? Like, what else would you have people take a look at?
I always feel worried not mentioning everyone that's awesome. But anyway, I'll limit
you to three. You just have to name three. And if they don't make it, it's okay. Whatever you think.
Noah Smith, he's got a newsletter called No Opinions, which I just learned so much from reading his stuff. He's on Substack. He's actually like right below me in the rankings. So it's like counterproductive to recommend him, but he's that good. And then Emily Oster, like family kid stuff is always great. I don't know if you all know her, but she writes incredible stuff on
kid stuff.
So that one is awesome. And she is on Substack also. And then Tyler Cohen is the other one that comes to mind immediately. He's got this podcast called Conversation with Tyler. He's got a blog called Marginal Revolution, I think it's called. And I always just learn so much every time I hear him talk. And he's an amazing interviewer too.
Love that. I'm going to go check out Tyler because I'm always looking to be a better interview. Speaking of that though, Lenny, thank you so much. We really deeply appreciate you coming on Marketing Against the Grain today. Thank you so much for your time, and we'll talk to you again real soon.